Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
I'm Dr. Redmond.
And tonight we're finally done with Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, always and forever until next season.
Yeah.
There's no escaping it. Much as we might wish there was. Okay. Let's get to it. Let's get right at this thing. Our first and only episode is episode 13, Paper Orphans.
And I was wrong.
Oh, yay.
Yay. About my prediction from last episode.
Exactly.
You know, but, I mean, they did talk about what I was talking about. That
I mean, the title, you are absolutely right to talk about the title.
Yeah.
But the title has nothing to do with the plot of
Zero to do with the plot of the episode.
I mean, technically, they find some kidnapped children during the plot of the episode, but that's not what the episode is about. The episode is a recreation of the, what's it called? They mention it in the episode, the Madeleine McCann disappearance. Which was this little girl whose British family was on vacation in Portugal, living in a resort community. And they went out to dinner. When they came home, the little girl was gone and has never been seen since. And this happened back in, I think, 2005, 2007,
something
like that. And
they blame the parents on and off. And...
Yep, no, they blame the parents. And the thing about giving her... giving the kid allergy medication was that there were stories, that's what happens in this episode. They give the little girl allergy medication and it, you know, it's like Benadryl, it zonks her right out. And the theory is that these parents liked to drug their, I mean, this is, again, I'm not saying this happened. This is the theory of the Portuguese prosecutors, was that the parents liked to give their daughter like sedatives so they could get her off to sleep and they could go enjoy their vacation. And the assumption the police were making is that gave her too much or too long and she overdosed and died, and they got rid of the body and then pretended it was an abduction.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the popular theory that, you know, the Portuguese government pursued, but they pursued it unsuccessfully. And the girl has never, no remains have ever been found. No one has ever been charged. It is just a famous disappearance at this point. And so this is the episode, an episode of this show, adapting that right down to the media deciding the parents are at fault right away.
Yeah.
Like, suspiciously quickly.
Yes, and Gary Sinise tells that reporter what for.
I know. But I was just kind of amazed by how fast, like, a bunch of white American reporters are on the scene having intimate details about the case. It does not say good things about the incorruptibility of the Haitian police department. If they were able to get that much information that quickly. Because it's the next day.
Well, yeah, it's not even...
The thing about, like, he even knows about the allergy medication.
Medication, yeah.
That's fast. Some might say... I understand. They want to perfectly recreate the Madeleine McCann situation, so they have to put it there. This, of course, is a much happier ending than that situation, since they do find the little girl, and they save...
Well, remember, it's Criminal Minds.
I know it is. We've met the little girl. She had a line, so she's going to be fine.
Yep.
You're absolutely right.
I wasn't the least bit worried.
Well, fundamentally, the only thing they need to do to solve this case is just do a cognitive interview, which is nice.
Yeah.
Because they literally just ask this guy what he remembers, and it's like, oh, a nanny was weirdly fixated on my daughter that day. And, boom. That's her. Okay, well, she was wearing a uniform of a company, and I know her name, so it doesn't take them long to find her at all.
No.
Which is nice.
Well, yeah, and they have the dogs. Because at one point, I have to admit, at one point in the show, they're standing there talking, and I'm going, well, why aren't you having the dogs continue the search?
Yeah.
If she's not here. But then it turns out the dogs were.
Yes.
They were just being handled by somebody else, not the team, and the dogs did find something else.
Yeah. You know, it worked out well, and I gotta say, it's nice to see them actually using dogs.
Yes.
you know, because they are a very useful resource when it comes to finding missing people. Dogs have incredibly intense senses, and going forward, we're going to be talking on Criminal Minds about a couple of cases where a dog would have solved this case immediately, and for some reason they don't use a dog. And it really drags out and allows more murders to happen. So yeah, something to think about. But yes, I think overall it's surprising. I was afraid when they were going to Haiti that we would get a lot of racist nonsense. Because, you know, Americans really do look down on Haiti quite a bit, just generally.
Except
that, because of the revolutions and the Duvaliers and the AIDS crisis there and their constant, you know, the hurricane and then the earthquake, like the general consensus in the American media is that Haiti is a mess, and that is the plot of this episode.
Yes, okay, but Haiti is a mess. But you have to remember, it isn't going to get so bad because, first of all, there were a lot of Americans and particularly a lot of Christian American groups that went down into Haiti.
Oh, yeah.
To help and to stay. And as you see, this couple goes down once a year and is involved in the rebuilding of Haiti. I wasn't terrible. I was pleasantly surprised, I suppose, as you were, that they weren't more.
Yeah, like the closest thing to thing to getting really judgmental or just like shaking their heads at the pointlessness of it all is the montage we get of this woman's entire family, you know, dying because of the endless tragedies that are visited upon the people of Haiti. And they're like, well, of course that would drive someone to insanity. And I'm like, I know they're trying to, you know, microcosm the entire experience of being Haitian into one woman, right? To make a point about how much hardship that country has gone through. But I find it is a bit much to blame, like, crime on, like, her crimes on the fate of Haiti. I found that was going a bit far, but it's not a big problem.
Simply because if that was enough to turn somebody crazy, then all Haitians would be crazy.
No.
You know, because they've all gone through it. Yeah. Like, it's not like she was unique and she was a single person that this happened to.
Yeah. Everybody has lost.
You know, I mean, it was just
family members in that country.
Hurricane, flood. It was just one thing after another. You have to. Well, it's a terrible place to have a civilization, I guess, you know.
Well, yeah, because they just get hit by one natural disaster after another.
Yeah, and it's nobody can, you know, it's not a blame thing. And they did talk about some of the crime that got set up. But I think that there is there isn't that much negativity. I suspect that they do more, Americans do more for Haiti than they do for Puerto Rico.
Oh, God.
To be honest.
That wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, I have no evidence to back that up, but if you told me that was the statistic, given the way it's covered in their media, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
Yeah, I think, and Haiti, I mean, there's a lot of Canadians down in Haiti, too.
Yeah.
People who go down once a year. For whatever reason, Haiti became sort of a central point for doing good.
Yeah.
If I could call it that, and it's not to say it's
like
a bad
thing. It became the focus or the loci of all of the charitable endeavors of a huge part of the American population.
And you know, there's a lot in Canadian too. Now, in Canada, of course, because Haitians speak French, it makes a lot of sense. And you did have an awful lot of Haitians who moved to Canada.
That's true.
Into Quebec. Again, another issue. but yeah, so it was, but I think it was just that it was so, for Haiti, it was just one thing after another that just finally focused everything on Haiti.
Yeah.
In a way that it doesn't get focused on Jamaica or any of those other places. It was you know, it just somehow or another in a 10-year or 15-year period, it was just like, oh my, these poor people.
Yeah.
You know, if there was a God, what sin are they paying for?
Well, I mean, the let's not forget, was it Pat Robertson who said that they were they had made a deal with Satan to get rid of slavery, and now the deal with Satan was coming due? I don't remember which one of the Christian pastors it was who said that. It probably wasn't actually Pat Robertson. It was probably someone on Pat Robertson's TV show. But yeah, someone after the earthquake said that they had made a deal with Satan to, you know, empower the famous slave revolt. And this was Satan calling in the debt. Yeah, that's right. Ending slavery is something only Satan could want. Thanks, American Christians.
Well, or that particular
I know,
group that of particular. 700 clubbers.
Yeah.
And, but it was the 80s were a bizarre period for the rise in mega churches and this bizarre form of Christianity. It really is a rise in the 80s because that's when you saw the Bakers.
Yeah.
And then you saw the rise and fall of the Bakers, and the 700 Club was still there.
Yep.
And there was a whole bunch of other ones. And that's when basically Liberty College really went sky high. Jerry Falwell.
Well, I mean, it's kind of fascinating because, I mean, and the difference between the 80s and the present is that all of the horrible evangelical mega pastors are still there. It's just in the 80s, they had to pretend that they weren't in it for the money. And then when everyone found out they were in it for the money, they, you know, got into a lot of trouble. But the modern mega pastors just say they're in it for the money. They publicly say, I'm in it for the money. Give me money to get rich and God will appreciate that and you'll get rich too. And that doesn't work for anyone, but the pastors get rich and no one gets angry at them because they said from the start they were in it for the money and that the fact that they're rich now is a sign of God's favor for them.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's
yes,
disgusting. I mean, the current part of day the prosperity gospel people are so much more despicable than the mega pastors of the 80s. The Faith Healers, 700 Clubs, your old Billy Graham Crusades of the 70s. Like, the modern people are just
Billy Graham Crusade started in the 50s and the 60s. He certainly wasn't in it for the money. But
no, not at all. But his
people should go and watch the it was still pretty good. The one with Richard, you know, Walton.
The Walton. Glory, Glory?
Glory, Glory was what it was called. Yeah, that was a really good.
Yeah, that was a really good miniseries about, you know,
how again, he just slowly got. Yeah, how he slowly got corrupted.
Well, it's about the corrupting influence of money on religion. And it's this really good miniseries about that.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there was a recent one, The Fabulous Gemstones, that covered a bunch of similar territory that people interested in the subject should check out. It's a lot broader than Glory Glory was, because it's Danny McBride and company, and John Goodman's in it, and it's, I think, Walton Goggins is in it, too? I'm trying to remember. But the point is, it's covering a lot of the same subject matter.
Right. Well, and of all things, I watched an SUV this week.
SVU last
week. It came on and I watched it, and it was about a black megachurch pastor and his wife was sexually abusing young girls. And and the funny thing is that I guess one of the DAs or the assistant DAs was in his church. And it was actually a really good episode. I watched it and I was going, how's this going to work itself out? You know, and they end up, of course, going to trial. And then you see the guy at the end still, you know, this is Satan, God testing him, right? Jeez.
Yeah.
You just go, oh my Lord, cause he's in jail now forever. And how he spent all this money buying them off, and how his wife, who is his co-pastor, just can't, when she finally just does the holy shit, it is true.
Yeah.
You know, and then she goes and sees the women. This is how it solves itself. So nobody has to go watch it. No, but she goes and talks to these girls and asks for their forgiveness for letting this happen and not seeing it.
Oh.
It was really, I mean, it was a really good episode. It wasn't an, oh, but it, no, it was a really good episode.
I think that's one of the weird things about the episode is you don't really get the sense that the couple at the center of this are part of, are doing it for religious reasons.
Oh, no, no, no. There's no, and we just got, we were just talking about generally speaking why Haiti
Haiti gets paid attention. No, but I just, it's interesting that as you push say, here. The huge push by the evangelicals in America, it's kind of weird that these characters aren't more religious.
Oh, but I'm sure that they are.
Well, no, but it's completely left out of the episode.
Yeah. Like, utterly. No. And it's fine, and they're going to adopt this little boy.
Yeah.
So that seems, and they all seem to want him. So.
Oh yeah.
Hopefully, they're going back to a place that's going to accept this little child. But
And maybe I could rewind. I didn't catch what state they were from, but I'm like, oh God, I hope it's somewhere in the north.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just hoping
they don't have accents, so maybe they're you know. Hopefully it's somewhere in the north.
Yeah, somewhere, you know, maybe they're in New Vermont or New Hampshire or New York.
I mean, even if they're from Illinois or, you know.
Yeah, somewhere, like Detroit, Michigan, somewhere.
Exactly. Anywhere that kid's not going to have a hassle by being a French kid from Haiti.
Yeah.
Although I don't think there's anywhere he's going to be completely free from a hassle, but he'll lose his accent quickly. It'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. And besides, the little girls are all learning to speak French. So, you know, that.
By the way, just FYI, complete waste of time. French is a dying language. But.
no. Tell that to the French.
Well, if they honestly, if they didn't know it, they wouldn't act the way they do.
Jesus.
If you don't let new words into your language, it dies. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Sorry, and honestly, we're not going to get into it here, but there's a ton of racist and sexist stuff baked into the French language that in this day and age makes it very uncomfortable to use in an international setting. So,
yeah. Well, we'll see what happens there. Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely an issue. You speak French. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're
like,
talking
about. And if anyone listening to this may ask the question, how can a language itself be racist? They found a way. They're French. Look up a little thing called French colonialism, and you'll find out. Seriously, though, I think, honestly, for the end of the season, I was worried they were going to go all in on something, but it's fairly harmless as these episodes go. Like I said, the only thing that I found even the slightest sticking point was them trying to personalize all of the suffering of Haiti into one character. But even that's, I mean, the show has such sympathy for it, and you can say it's a paternalistic sympathy, and that kind of is, but at least it's an attempt to show an empathy for the situation and a sympathy for this character.
Yes.
So I enjoyed that.
No, and you don't have Gary Sinise threatening anybody.
I know.
You know, and he's working very, you know, competently, cooperatively with all of these people. Yeah. And once they've just quickly figured out it wasn't anybody in the hotel, and, you know, there's no kind of vicious murders. The most vicious thing that happens is that they catch this one guy who's been... And his group, who are also running the nanny service, but they were capturing Haitian children.
Sell for adoption. And by the way, that's how bad...
Or the sex trade.
Or into the sex trade. Like, we don't really know. It's disgusting, but we don't know which one it is. And a thing that's kind of fascinating about it is, you may wonder, how do you turn a profit on... selling a kid into adoption? Well, you have to pay fees to adopt someone.
Yeah.
And they're essentially fraudulent lawyers who will take that. Let's just say that, you know, $20,000 you pay for all of the paperwork to adopt a child, that can go a long way in Haiti.
To say the least.
To say the least.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's definitely something else. But yeah, it's I gotta say, it's definitely one of their least offensive episodes. We find out that Jack has, like, five kids?
Looks like it. Yep. They've still got two more at home.
That's what I'm saying. It's like
she must be they the only girl, the two, though.
Well, we don't know. He said, no, no. Actually, I think the younger ones might be two daughters because, or maybe they're also boys because we're specifically said Sherry Stringfield, who plays his wife, and him are talking, and they talk about how it was easier when the boys went off to college.
Left. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Than it is with their first girl to go off to college. So we don't actually know about the two younger ones, whether they're boys or girls, but they referenced two other boys who have already gone off to college.
Yes.
So yeah, this is the first girl leaving for college, which is why he's so overprotective. And understandably so. I mean, he lives in a world where people get kidnapped and raped and murdered all the time.
Given the world that anyone in Criminal Minds lives.
But then again, she's like going to Berkeley. It's like, she's not going to study in Spain, Jack. She'll be fine.
Unless she becomes radicalized and hates the FBI, learns to hate the FBI.
The FBI. Okay, that's...
She is going to Berkeley.
His real objection.
Yeah, his real objection was, you know, couldn't she have picked another university?
Yeah, better school. So yes, let's. I think that means it's time, basically, to look at the season as a whole. And I think it's fair to say, I mean, I know what I want to say. The best and the worst episodes are. I think I said it last week, and I still think it's true that the best episode of the year was the South Africa episode, because it found a way to, like, actually talk about the horrors of apartheid and have it be a minimum of, well, it was a bad situation on all sides or any nonsense like that. No, the white guys were just evil. They were just evil in every possible way.
Yeah.
They were horrible monsters of the worst order. And it is good that their government has been wiped out, right? And they managed to put all of that in with a nice little thriller plot. Like I said, there was a chance to do the psychology of the killer a little better, but the episode didn't have much time for that since it is relatively plot dense, and you've got a villain in the American set as well. And of course, the worst episode for me was Cuba.
Yeah, I don't even think there's any question about that. I wish we could come to some kind of a disagreement in this, but no, we're not. This was the South Africa episode probably was the best. I would say Paper Orphans had the least offensive stuff in it.
That's true.
I mean, you could. That's not a category we usually judge anything by, but in this case, Paper Orphans is probably the least offensive because even in the South Africa stuff, there was... You know, things that, Lord, you guys.
I know.
I could say in Paper Orphans that you still have, you know, some woman going back to her ancestral stuff. In this case, it's a woman instead of the father, son, or the ancestors. And
the son's
whatever.
Trying to, live up to that thing.
But,
you do get, you get a bit of the magic stuff right at the end.
Yes,
but it's not like the magic wasn't like driving her, it wasn't driving her to do horrible things. It's just she wanted her granddaughter back.
Yeah. And I think that what happened there is that the fear was that because she wasn't a practitioner, that she might screw it up and the child will die.
Yeah.
Because the point is not for the child to die. She wasn't planning on killing the child. It's just that the fear is the fact that she is a layperson practicing something that is very, very scary.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and, you know, the South African one, though, was quite good in compared to the whole thing. But the Cuba one was just, and we don't even have to rehash it.
I know. I mean, if it was the one from the earlier in the year, I would say, well, we should reiterate the plot. It's from last week, so people can listen to it easily or have just listened to it. And,
and listen to us just screaming.
Yeah, it's the horrific politics of that episode, right?
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, just nightmarish politics.
Yeah, it still boggles my mind that they could. I mean, for a diff in some ways for a different reason.
Yeah.
Than a lot of the other ones, but it's the other. I mean, there is in this particular show, you have, and we've talked about it, but the shows as a whole, other than probably Paper Orphans.
Yeah.
Every single one of them is so offensive towards the countries that they go into, even places like, you know, Spain.
Yep.
And I guess it's just, maybe it's because the Spanish are Spanish speaking and Americans, but even the French one, I mean, I found myself therefore, I mean, given the funny thing we just said about the French, but we were talking about the French language.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there I am in the strange position of defending, right? Sometimes the French, but my Lord, that was even, it didn't matter where they went.
Yeah.
Other than this episode in Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
Every single episode, and actually Erica Messer wrote this one.
Right.
She wrote the first one and the last one.
Oh.
I think the show might have done a little bit better if they had ordered their episodes differently.
Maybe.
If they had given people a little bit of relief. Now, I'm not saying that it would have brought me to watch the show.
No,
but it, in terms of losing, I mean, the Cuba one, everybody seems to have, after that one, kind of a whole bunch of
have stopped watching it for, I think, good reasons.
Yeah. It just, we were talking, I don't know what I was saying yesterday when we were talking about this, that this thing was in pre-production in 2015.
Yeah.
Probably they started thinking about it in 2014.
Well, that's when she would have started thinking about doing the show, and she did the pilot in 2015.
2015.
The backdoor pilot, yeah. And then they ordered it to series based on the backdoor pilot.
Yeah.
Right? And presumably.
Presumably, because it probably did okay. And it, I mean, we had our problems with it, but it wasn't overly, you know, wasn't too offensive.
No, I don't think it was.
Criminal Minds. Well, yeah, but we say that because if I go back and listen to that, I'll bet you we'll find out we thought it was plenty offensive.
Well, it was pretty offensive. I mean, honestly, it wasn't terrible. I mean, I remember my big issues being the way they talked about the island as being, you know, like this crazy foreign place that, you know, it's like all of those lines about how Americans think just because people speak English around them that they're safe, but that's not what it's like. Americans are, you know, the prey of everyone in a, you know.
Yeah, well, and oh, I know what, see, now that we're talking about that backdoor pilot,
yeah,
and because of course it was a British Commonwealth protectorate, it was part of, as was Jamaica, right?
Yes.
So the British colonized all of these places. And when I was watching the initial reaction when Boris Johnson, that was it yesterday. And then I started thinking about this show.
Right.
So I'll try and pull my thoughts together there. What happened was, is I was just when Boris Johnson is taken to the hospital.
Right.
And apparently in the morning he had been doing his morning meeting, and at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, our time, which would have been 5 hours later, their time, right, he was taken into the emergency, into the hospital.
And put in intensive care.
Well, he wasn't put in intensive care right away.
Yeah, but that's not relevant to the story you're telling.
Right. And then he was put in. Yeah, he was put into intensive care, like when he went in. But yesterday, 2 days ago, he went into intensive care.
Yeah.
Or yesterday. No, anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. Yesterday, I think he went into intensive care. That was it yesterday. And then because they had then their foreign secretary, your comment about foreign secretaries.
Yes.
Right? takes over.
Well, that's what it's called everywhere else in the world. Yeah.
So he takes over. He took over.
He's acting prime minister. Johnson.
He's the acting prime minister now. But I was listening to, it had to be Brooke Baldwin, and sort of her comment she was asking, and I'm listening to this, and I'm going, you don't understand how the parliamentary system works, do you?
Yeah.
Like, no, this is not, there is no chaos here. There is going to be no, and she was trying to get the reporter, the British reporter, like the CNN, and it's someone who's a CNN, part of CNN, right? Yeah. To at least say, yes, everything is sort of chaotic, I guess, almost, or people are really upset. Because I saw the reporter a little bit later, and she had sort of cottoned on to sort of, well, yes, people are really upset. But I'm going, yeah, you don't understand that there isn't, it's a nice modulated system, you know, that's,
well, yeah, because, and that's the thing, I hate to say it, but because England has a queen, yeah, they don't have this need to imagine that the leader of the country, the prime minister, is some kind of a godly figure who's in charge of everything. People,
yeah,
understand that they're just the head civil service servant in a way, yes, that Americans don't. That doesn't stop British prime ministers from acting like they're the king from time to time and thinking themselves that way.
Yeah.
But the fact is, people know that if anything happens to the prime minister, well, there's like 18 people next in line who can do the job just fine.
Yes.
All of whom, and this is the key part, got just as many votes as the prime minister did, because you don't directly vote for the prime minister.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, and you do not vote for Boris Johnson to be prime
unless
minister.
Unless you live in his yeah, district.
Yeah. It's just like, anyway, but I was watching all of this and I'm going, and it was very interesting because the Queen made a speech. On Sunday,
right,
and Boris had gone in on Thursday or Friday, and I think Thursday was when she was asked, or she actually recorded it, like, right, she wasn't live like she is often on Christmas. It was, yeah, pre-recorded, so it could be on at a good time, I guess.
Makes sense.
But you have to understand, like, you just watched that the Queen. And I mean, the whole thing was live. Oh, it was on Saturday or Sunday because it was Frederica, whatever her name. And okay, it was on Canadian channels too.
Of course.
But it was interesting. And then you watched afterwards the sort of discussion. And I think it's just, yes, this calm. She's straightforward. She's been there forever. She's the first royal to have ever served in the military, to don on a military in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she referred back to the time when they were at Windsor Castle when it was terrible, and she and Margaret gave a talk to the people, you know, and we will get through this eventually, but right now, and it was just this nice, quiet, reassuring structure. The world will continue.
Yeah, we will, you know, persevere. And then,
yes. And the funny thing was, is one of the questions that Frederica said, well, yeah, but she didn't even mention her son had it.
Yeah.
Right? Well, no, that has nothing to do with anything.
No,
her
it
personal
have anything to do with the country.
With the country. No. No,
and
because
to refocus
there
this
is
back
a clear
slightly
line of succession.
No, there is. But to refocus this back slightly, you got to remember, people are listening to this long after.
Yes, this all happened.
This all happened. And I think part of what we're getting at here is, and you know, I hate to say presumptuous, but it's part of it is quite simply that, like, America's deep, you know, suspicion for all of these other countries and their paranoia out of all of these other countries, it seems to come from a place of, and I don't want to psychoanalyze them too much, although that's what the show's about, like, a massive amount of insecurity. Right. And they seem to, like, they're so worried about their country's status that they have to boldly go out there and try and reassert American superiority all over the world. And by contrast, you have a place like England where it's just stable there. Yes, they have their own problems with xenophobia. And yeah, they really have their own problems with racism. They ran off the one of their princes because they're so racist.
Yes.
You know, like their racism is so bad that it's like a guy and his wife fled to Canada.
Yeah.
Right. But the point is, at their core, there is more comfort about England's place in the world. And America doesn't have that. America has this real, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's like sense of inadequacy on the world stage. Right. They worry that people aren't taking. And I mean, this is, I think, and this is what I wanted to spin this towards. I don't think it's accidental that this first season got greenlit and was made while Donald Trump was running for president.
Yeah, this is what I was getting to eventually, right?
Yeah.
That what you ended up with, right, is my question at the beginning of how did this show get greenlit? And the reason that I look at Boris Johnson and then the Queen and then even CNN, which has very intelligent reporters, very good people.
Yeah.
And, you know, even they don't have a sense of political history. You have to get someone like Jake Tapper, whose mother was Canadian.
Yeah.
Right. And then he seems to have a better understanding of how other governments work. Hmm. But for the most part, and I don't know whether it is insecurity, but sometimes I just go the big universities. And I think that, I don't know. When I was watching all these films this year, because I was teaching the film course and I used, The Alamo, and I used Young Guns and Young Guns 2.
Right.
And the two Alamos, the one in 2004, which was interesting. It was a very different Alamo, of course, than John Wayne's, which you would expect.
Naturally. Yeah.
We watched The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. We watched Chisholm. We watched a number of these movies. And it is fascinating, absolutely fascinating, how that is all part of the mythology, like the mythology that they don't seem, that seems to be good in their country. People like Jesse James, because I just couldn't do the whole Jesse James movies.
Yeah.
I couldn't fit it into the year.
That's a big thing to buy, a big chunk of movies to bite off.
Yeah, like you'd have to do a whole course just on Jesse James.
Yeah.
Because there are so many, and Long Riders being one of the better ones. But you want to watch Brad Pitt's,
Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
Yeah, I mean, which is it? So you'd have to do all of that. So you're taking a look at this, and you're taking a look at the crime films. Yeah. And you're going, this is how culturally they still seem to see themselves.
Yes.
That somehow or another, that all of these things, they still worship the friggin' Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
It is still this somehow or another. They still seem to think they won the War of 1812. We won't talk about it. They still seem to, you know, not understand that Teddy Roosevelt and the way that they all worked to invade Mexico and to gain all of that territory is disgusting.
Yep.
I mean, when you read that history and you're not American,
it's horrific.
It's a horrific history. It is as bad as anything any of these people do. And then go and read Blood Meridian, which everybody hailed. You know, the work, go look at the works of Cormac McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
Like No Country for Old Men.
Yep.
You know, go take a look at all of those things and built into the popular culture. Like, look at, you know, Davy Crockett. You know, and Daniel Boone.
Well, no, but it's and they are the frontier spirit. It
Wyatt
is the yeah.
Earp, a criminal. Yeah. The yeah. man was a protection, ran a protection racket.
Protection racket, yeah. And he didn't like other mobsters on his patch. And
yeah.
That's what the gunfight in the OK Corral was about. Like there were other gunmen that he didn't like in his area, so you know, he tried to run them out of town. They wouldn't go.
So you're looking at
they had a gunfight.
Yeah, all of that, which wasn't seen that way in the 19th century necessarily.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not even talking about sort of like what they did to the First Nations peoples, and we'll just go listen no. to. You know, there's any number of mutants.
Well, we did. There's many things you can find find out about the treatment of First Nations. But if you want a primer on it, listen to our episode from back when we talked about the first season when they had murders on an Indian reservation, mm-hmm. where people were trying to the tribe or whatever, where they were trying to frame natives for their crimes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We had a lot to say about the history between the FBI.
Yeah, and First Nations people, and they didn't,
peoples.
And Pine Ridge and everything else. And that one people seem to connect to problematically, but they don't seem to question all of this stuff that somehow or another, this go get 'em, you know, go west, and all of this and all of these people have been turned into these weird heroes. And I every time I think about Canada, I'm going, well, yeah, and people will go, okay, well, yeah, but isn't it too bad that we don't have? And I'm going,
no
it's not too bad. We don't have.
It's not bad that we don't have cowboy culture here,
and that we don't. But we don't have this idea. The West was, even when I was growing up, and we have not treated. I would not say we treated our First Nations peoples fairly at all. That's not the point. But even when I was growing up, like when I was doing things like Louis Riel, and this is before the whole world starts to talk about this, it was pretty clear he got a raw deal.
Yeah.
And the Winnipeg General Strike, it was pretty friggin' that he got a wrong deal. I mean, I wish, because we closed down the school, my students did not get to dealing with coal mining and unions. But how they shift that thing around in the culture too, like about West Virginia and about the Appalachians and about Southern Kentucky and all of that.
Getting sidetracked again.
Well,
I'm
talking about this show, the horribleness that we have been complaining about in 12 of the 13 episodes epitomizes. It's like it's taken all of the worst of sort of American national identity and stuck it in 12 episodes of this show.
Mm-hmm.
And hardly anybody's ever seen it because they've written it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Xenophobic as this, that. But when you start watching it and thinking about it the way we do, and because it went on air in 2016, at the same time that you're seeing the rise of Donald Trump,
mm-hmm.
and you're going, it's like it's all come together. If you wonder how Donald Trump got elected, and even if he stole it because of the Electoral College, it's not the first time it happened. And it won't be the last, I suspect, until they do something about the Electoral College.
Yeah.
But whether they ever will, I don't think that so. But that's neither here nor there. We've got a parliamentary system, and we have to hope to God we never get to a Republican system.
Oh, God, that's trash.
Anyway.
That's so clear here, right, is that while Donald Trump was running for president, right, talking about how America could be great again and how America will be respected on the world stage and blah, blah, blah. You know, just talking all of his racist, fascist nonsense, right? What's fascinating is you have this show on the air at the same time operating based on the same assumptions. right? And at its core, this is a show that comes from the starting point of course, America's right.
Yeah.
Of course, like, that essentially America is the white backdrop upon which, you know, all colors are then added to serve as contrast.
Yeah.
Right? And things are only important in the way they differentiate from how those things run in America. That is the world that the show is suggesting exists. That America is the default. That yeah. there is a default, and America's it. And everything else, and that's the crazy part of the show, is it's not treating it like, well, of course, to America, this looks like normal, but other cultures have their own things. We are shown a world where integral to the operation of this world is the assumption that by not being American, those other cultures are lesser than American.
Yeah. I mean, it was, in some ways, like, I keep thinking, whenever I think about it, I remember, I mean, I grew up in a world where the sun never set on the British Empire, even though it was now the Commonwealth of countries. Yeah. Right?
In case you're wondering, that's an old term. The sun never sets on the British Empire. It's a lot of people don't know what that means now.
Oh,
because yeah. It meant that literally there was a part of the world at any given time that was under the governance of the Queen of England in yeah. every time zone, meaning it's always day somewhere in the English,
British Empire. Empire. It's British just Empire. Like it's 5 o'clock. I mean,
just like it's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's always,
let's go drinking because it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's always noon somewhere in the British Empire.
Right? Yeah.
And that's the thing, whether England, and I mean, they cheated a little by having Canada. And that's 6 time zones right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Whoa, we got it.
But if you think about it, like, because the idea is, right, so you've got Canada, and then just west of Canada, you have all sorts of islands that they have in the Pacific. And then you have, they had India, and then they had a whole bunch of Africa. And then after Africa, you circle back around to Britain itself.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's how the sun can never set on the British Empire. And that's, it's a clever little thing, but it's based on the idea that is the terrifying breadth of the world that they held in their grip
At once. And remember that Greenwich Mean Time, which is where all time zones are set from,
yeah,
is in the middle of England.
Yep. And by the way, that's how, like, even though a Canadian invented it, well, no, obviously it should be London time that this is all based on.
Well, of course, it's the British Empire. I mean, I was going to suggest, if we do another suggest what people watch, is that you can now go on to, I think it's Amazon, and watch, or Netflix, I don't know, but all of, and it must be, anyway, all of Murdoch Mysteries.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's only in Canada you can watch all of Murdoch Mysteries. It's in America, too?
You can watch it, because I think it's on Amazon, and it's on, it might be even on Acorn.
Yeah. No, and Murdoch Mysteries, I don't think it's a fantastic show, but it's an interesting show, and it's a decent look at what life was like in Canada during the days of the Commonwealth.
Yes, and you know, you get rid of the sci-fi stuff, but and you get at one point, you get a really good look at what Teddy Roosevelt was really like, as opposed to the Teddy Roosevelt of the alienist. Yeah.
The weedy, ineffectual Teddy Roosevelt of the alienist. I still haven't gotten over them changing Teddy Roosevelt beating up a one-armed man in a fight.
Yeah.
Because, like, that scene is so integral to both of their characters in the book. Why would you cut it out of the TV show? Yeah. You morons.
Well, why did you change the character of the woman so much?
Well, that's a whole other conversation.
Well, yeah, but no, but I mean, I think it all falls in, but why Teddy Roosevelt and...
Yeah, why'd you ruin Teddy Roosevelt's show?
Yeah.
No, it's very odd, but what I think that's the key, and of course, Teddy Roosevelt's, you know, desire to make Mexico part of... part of America, of course, is just one of the many examples of that happening over
yes,
and over
well,
and over
again. You haven't read the same second book yet, have you?
No,
Angel,
I haven't.
Angel from Hell, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it Teddy Roosevelt's back there again.
Well, of course.
And you do get the entire it runs around the whole business of Spain.
Oh, okay.
And Mexico.
Spanish American War and okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that, see, that's going to be interesting to discuss.
Book. So, we'll yeah, be of course, because that at some point.
Oh, we will when the second season of the show comes out.
Yes. It's not
out
yet.
I think it's been shot. Well, it's just a question of whether when they're going to air it, because I know that all TV schedules have been thrown up in the air by this whole coronavirus thing. So, honestly, by the time people listen to this episode, we may have already covered The Alienist Season 2. It's all up in the air right now, is the tragic thing. But I think it factors in, and that's why it's so tough for us to find, like, I mean, if you want our complaints about the specific episodes, that's what the individual episodes of this podcast have been for. But what the thing that's difficult to grapple with is holistically, what is this show saying about America? And
yeah,
and that's why we keep, you know, going on these tangents about all of these other visions of America that are put forward in both in fiction and in the way people write their history is. This show is this distillation of the idea of America as cultural superior, America as, you know, hegemony, America as everybody has to speak English, everyone has to eat McDonald's, and once we can get everybody doing that, everything else will just sort itself out. That's the core mindset of this show. Things are only dangerous to the extent that they are different than how they are in America. And that's been underlying every single episode.
Yeah, it's...
And literally the only place where it wasn't is the episode where the team was up against the moral equivalent of Nazi war criminals. Because there's no moral difference between the apartheid and the actual Nazis. That's just a fact. There's more moral difference between the people who ran apartheid and Nazis. They were the same kind of racist, genocidal monsters.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not going to make a big deal out of this, but it's not an accident that a bunch of Nazis actually did move, you know, to South Africa.
Yeah, and that, I know, and I mean, and I don't want to say that the British Empire was a great empire.
Oh, God, no.
I mean, let's think about Amritsar. Let's talk about a whole bunch of things.
Let's talk about Gallipoli. Let's talk about that time Winston Churchill starved millions of people to death during World War II. You know, by not sending them food. Yeah, you know, made a famine a million times worse by his terrible policies because he didn't care about Indian people. Like, the British Empire has not historically done great things at all.
Well, it's a facet of being an empire, okay?
That's true.
And as I've always said, though, when I look at all the other colonial powers, I go, okay, well, you know, yeah, if you have to be an empire, it's sort of like looking at the Roman Empire and comparing it to people like, yeah, they did bad things. You know, but in terms of empires, there are some empires that are worse than other empires, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it depends. And the British Empire, it accidentally, I mean, the Industrial Revolution is what made it the empire.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, did you really want to? Oh, never mind. Let's just move away from empires. Problem, but really it's this show just epitomizes the whole thing. And now what I want to do is suggest, so that people will not think that we're bashing all American peoples and academics and things like that. There is a series of books, okay, and they are easily read. They're not academic books. They don't have loads of footnotes. They've got lots of pictures, but they are written by historians who have been seriously rethinking some of their own assumptions. And they're called New Narratives in American History. And it's just slow. It's Oxford, New York, Oxford University Press. But the one I want to talk about is called Sleuthing the Alamo, Davy Crockett's Last Stand and Other Mysteries of the Texas Revolution. And it's James E. Crisp, who is now at North Carolina, but he's a Texan. And he talks about how he grew up in Texas. And then there's another one that's really good on the Civil War. I can't get my hands on it right now. On the American Civil War. And, you know, this assumption about how everybody in the South was so gung-ho. And it's about people who actually, whole groups of people who didn't want to fight in the South and who headed for the hills. In other words, resistance. They were draft dodgers to the Confederacy. It's an interesting take as well. So there's a whole bunch of series of books like that that kind of take a look at these national myths, and they're not bashing and they're not anything else. I mean, he basically does his Pride and Prejudice confession thing in the very first chapter. I made my students read this particular one because it is interesting from the comic books to everything, right? And state pictures and reshifting the narrative through art and looking at Sam Houston speechwriters and things like that. Like it's a fascinating, and the problem that happens with primary sources from Mexico that people just want to throw out of the window. And there was a lot of problems with one particular thing probably for about 60 or 70 years because they didn't like the narrative. You know, because it didn't fit in with the cultural narrative about the Alamo. And that was basically that Davy Crockett surrendered, basically was found alive.
Yeah.
And they try to do that. They sort of try to do that in the Alamo, the 2004 Alamo. So he's still alive and then he gets killed afterwards, but you still don't have quite the narrative that you still end up with the myth at the end of it.
Yeah. And I think that's something that I'm going to be interested to see how it goes forward in season two, because fundamentally, right, there is what America has at its core, right, is this myth about America's the shining city on the hill. America's the good guys. America's the world.
Heaven
tops.
On earth.
World. Everyone wants to move to America, right? Because America is the shining example of what we can all reach. And the problem is, right, that everyone, historically speaking, and this is going to sound terrible, but historically speaking, everyone wanted to get to America because America didn't have any restrictions on immigration.
Yeah.
It was the one country in the world up until like after World War One, where you could just get on a boat and go to America and you're an American now.
Yeah.
Right. And that's just true. That's the fact of how their immigration system worked. Like literally it took them the one thing that happened in the entire history of America was in the late 19th century. They passed a law that no more Chinese people could move there because they were afraid too many Chinese people were going to come to California and take over California.
Well, yeah, it was very interesting. And it also, of course, caused these problems when you started to do citizenship.
Yes.
Right. And you couldn't prove because you didn't have citizenship tests.
Yeah.
Way back when.
Of course not.
Kind of walked in, you moved in, and
you
could come and go.
They wrote down your name in a ledger and you were an American. Once they wrote your name, like you got off at Ellis Island, they wrote your name down in a ledger and then boom, go. There's Brooklyn right there.
Right.
Well, they often didn't get your name.
Yeah. Right.
But it's like, there's Brooklyn right now. You're an American now. Right. You know, and the same thing, I don't remember what the comparable island off of Los Angeles was called, but they did the same thing out in Los Angeles with all the people coming from Asia. And at a certain point, racists who thought that Asians were going to infect the character of America, you know, these racists decide we got to stop Asians from moving to America. But that was the only time that happened for the entire history of America up to, right, the 20th century. And the thing is, that creates a narrative because overwhelmingly, the people who live in America are people who fled problems in other country to come to America. You get this narrative of America as the goal, right? Because, I mean, it's a bit of a, it's a survivor and a selection bias, but all the people telling the story of America are the people who, whose ancestors successfully moved to America.
Yeah.
And so to all of them, moving to America seems like it must be the ultimate thing. But how many people, if all, if any other country, if, like if any other country had a completely open immigration policy, would have just been like, well, I'd like to be Swedish. Well, I'd like to be German. Well, I'd like to be French. Like, we don't know, because no other country had completely open immigration of the size of America's. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you get the situation where that simple legal policy creates this narrative of America that is the ultimate destination point of all immigrants in the world. Until and that assumption, yes, that assumption bleeds down into, well, if it's the ultimate destination, that must be because it's the best place to want to go. Mm-hmm. But what they don't understand is for 200 years, it was the only place that was guaranteed to let you in. You know, it's not that you desperately wanted to be American. It was a land of opportunity. It was the only place where the door was wide open, no matter who you were. And that narrative has changed to, it's the land of opportunity and it's where you go for a fresh start and blah, 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 blah. But the truth is, it was just, you know, your last, the last refuge of scoundrels. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like, I mean, at least in the British Empire, When they had their last refuge of scoundrels, it was because they turned Australia into a penal colony.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then they had a big discussion about whether they would actually colonize Australia. Like, yeah. They didn't colonize Australia. They controlled Australia, but they didn't colonize it.
No, not for they a long just, time.
They just created it as their penal colony.
Yeah, and then it built out, and they saw that, I mean, they saw there was land for ranching, and they saw there was plenty of lumber, and they went, oh, let's go for it.
Let's go for the colonization. And it was a big debate whether or not to colonize Australia.
But it's like, but think about it this way, like, literally, this is how open America's doors were. Like, Donald Trump's only an American citizen because his grandfather fled the draft.
He was a German. Yeah,
he was a Bavarian. He didn't want to have to join the army, so he fled the country to the only place that would let you go in, no questions asked.
Yeah.
Right? And that is what America has been historically. And that's why, by the way, all of these people who are like, America for Americans, close the doors, like, they're the ones who are violating all of the principles of America by trying to cut off immigration.
Yes, I heard one day, well, yeah, but, you know, people should just go back to where they came from. And I said, guess what?
You're free to
do
so.
We don't belong. Please go. We didn't come here. We don't belong here.
Yeah.
You know, so please go back where you came from, if that's what you think.
I'm sure England will be happy to have you.
Oh, well, no. In this case, it was Hungary.
Oh, Hungary will be happy to have you. There you go. But that's the thing. It's like, I'm sure somewhere in Europe, they'll love your nativist opinions.
Yeah, you know, there's, this whole idea is crazy. We all came over as colonists.
Mm-hmm.
All of us.
Columnists and refugees.
Yeah, well, yeah, but, you know, no, I mean, first wave in the
earliest days, we were all colonists, and then it became refugees, right? And then it became people who, for whatever reason, couldn't survive in Europe. Well, they came to America. Right. And yes, a lot of them did. Eventually, people heard about the gold rush and there were fortunes to made and blah, 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 blah. And that increased immigration. But so much of it was just like, if you couldn't make it in Europe for whatever reason, you came to America. And it's as simple as that. And the same thing happened in China until they had to pass that law to try and shut that down.
Yeah.
And I think that's. Please.
Can I? No, I think we need to. We need to start to kind of
wrap this up here.
So what I'm going to do though is put a plug for your King of the Ching Chong Chinaman.
A novel I wrote based on my I love the book King of the Ching Chong Chinaman. But what it is a very very crude satire of Blood Meridian.
Yes.
So it works better. It's a fine pulp, jokey pulp novel if you want to read it, but it's also a very specific parody of Blood Meridian.
It cost about 99 cents on Amazon.
Yeah. I would not be comfortable plugging my own book, but since you
I can plug it. I can plug it.
You're free
because as you're talking about all of this, I'm just going, oh yeah.
It fits in perfectly. No, it does.
It fits in as we start talking about the China, because this is what they were afraid of, is what happens in the King of Ching Chong Chinaman.
Exactly. The idea that they were all, and that's what I'm satirizing. The idea that they were a hive mind alien force.
Yes, that was just going to take over.
Yeah, it was just going to conquer America. It was
It's very funny. I mean,
well, it's a funny book, but it's a disgusting historical thing I was parodying.
Yes.
But yeah, the I think what it comes down to is that the reason we go off in these flights of fancy is it's really difficult to like zero in on the one thing that makes it wrong, because, and I think the key takeaway is what you said, which is like, miraculously, this one show manages to have integral to it every single thing that's wrong with America, all in one place.
And I don't think it has a clue
No.
that that's what it's doing.
No, not at all.
It does not. This is, it is astonishing. In some ways, even though I don't want to watch them, I am going to be fascinated to watch season two, because season two airs in 2017.
Yeah.
Right?
So part of it was being shot as Trump was winning the presidency. Yeah. And after he won the presidency.
Yeah.
I know. And that's going to be fascinating to see the turn it takes, if it does take a turn at all. So I hope you're excited to hear us talking about that. We're going to be back for that in just 4 weeks, I think, 3 or 4 weeks. For right now, we hope you enjoyed going through Criminal Minds Beyond Borders as much as, well, more than we did. We hope you enjoyed listening to us talk about it more than we liked watching the show. Wouldn't be hard. But yes, we're back next week with more of season 12 of Criminal Minds. And at the end of season 12, as always, between that and season 13, we're going to do an episode that's the first episode of season 2 of Beyond Borders. And then for the next 3 weeks after, 4 weeks after that, we'll watch the rest of the episodes, just like we did this time. But for now, we want to thank you for listening. We have, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you think we went on way too long about American exceptionalism and politics, we did warn you at the start of the first episode of this. That this was going to be explicitly political readings of this show every week. So you can't say you weren't warned. No, there's no other way to read the show. So we hope you have enjoyed it because of or in spite of that. If you have any comments, if you have any suggestions for other profiling-related fiction you think we should check out, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. If you're listening to this on some sort of an app, be sure to rate it. Because ratings and reviews are how people find the podcast. We will see you back here, oh my god, in just a few weeks on a Tuesday. But before then, Thursday for more season 12. We'll see you there, but until then, au revoir.
And, yeah. Have a good couple of days till Thursday.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.